May 3rd marks the 151st running of the Kentucky Derby. So how did the race become the longest continuously held sporting event in the United States? You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. I'm Lucy May. A book called The History of the Kentucky Derby in 75 Objects tells that story with selections from the vast collection at the Kentucky Derby Museum. Joining me in this recorded interview to talk about the book and how the Derby's history is intertwined with American history is Jessica Whitehead, the book's author and the Kentucky Derby Museum Curator of Collections. Welcome back, Jessica.
Thank you, Lucy. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. Your book tells this story in such an interesting way. And the very first object in the book is a beautiful quilt called Black Jocks. Can you talk about the significance of starting with that object?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's one of my favorite pieces in our collection. Our collection has more than 20,000 items in it. So it's sort of like choosing your favorite child when you're choosing your favorite object. But this is one that I think not only speaks to important history, but also important themes in the Kentucky Derby that run throughout the entire book and the entire Derby history narrative. And part of that is this idea that, like the United States, the Kentucky Derby is woven together from lots of different, diverse, colorful, and interesting pieces that have been woven together like this crazy quilt that you see as the first object in our book. Really, what we wanted to do with this book is not only showcase our collection, but also make sure that we were telling the stories of everyone who's contributed to the history of the Kentucky Derby. And as you've read, it is a really wide swath of people who have contributed to making this sporting event the cultural phenomenon it is today.
You write about this complex web of cooperation that existed between white horsemen and horsemen of color. Another object in your book, ankle boots worn by the racehorse Aristides in 1875, really helps illustrate that complex web. Explain how.
These little ankle boots, they're called galloping boots. They're a training aid for those really incredibly thin, graceful ankles that thoroughbreds have. These were worn by Aristides, who is that first Kentucky Derby winner, won in 1875, the inaugural Kentucky Derby. These boots, don't look like anything special. They're just canvas and leather. Maybe you would be thinking that one of the most important pieces in our collection is a shiny trophy or something like that. But really, it's pieces like this that can connect us to these figures whose stories for a long time weren't being told. And those were the incredible Black horsemen who were building the sport of thoroughbred horse racing in the United States, and of course, building the Kentucky Derby. Aristides was trained by an incredible trainer of the antebellum and postbellum era, a man named Ansel Williamson. Ansel Williamson was a formerly enslaved Black man who really rose to incredible levels, like training the very first Kentucky Derby winner, because of the experiences he had during the Civil War, like many Black men, being the absolute foundation of the thoroughbred racing and breeding industry in Kentucky and in the entire United States. So Ansel Williamson and the jockey who rode the very first Kentucky Derby winner, his name was Oliver Lewis. Both of them were Black men, and they can show us how integral the experience of Black men was to the early years of the Kentucky Derby.
We're talking in this recorded conversation about the history of the Kentucky Derby as examined through the Kentucky Derby Museum's collection. What role did gambling play? I'm thinking here about the bookmaker board pictured in the book and the system we use now to bet at the races.
Yeah, so it's important to remember that in the early days of horse racing in Kentucky and in the early days of the Kentucky Derby, the form of betting that we're used to now, that sort of became the gold standard of betting in horse racing all over the world internationally, which is called parimutuel betting. Parimutuel betting was, sort of the poor country cousin to systems like pool selling, pool auctions, and bookmaking. You've heard the term bookies. Bookies were big business in horse racing in the 1870s, 80s, and 90s, especially. One of the issues that horse racing was facing at the turn of the 20th century was something that was sweeping the nation in all kinds of cultural and social parts of American life. And that was waves of reform that were coming. So of course, prohibition was part of this. Women's suffrage was part of this. But gambling reform and anti-gambling legislation was a huge wave that was coming through the United States at the turn of the 20th century. And it was shuttering racetracks all over the United States because these reform movements were so opposed to what they saw as these really slimy kind of fraud-ridden bookmakers who they thought were, turning people to the devil and, doing things that were causing detriment to society through gambling on horse races. Enter pari-mutuel betting, which had been invented in the 1870s by actually a Frenchman who was part owner of the Moulin Rouge in Paris, which is interesting. But he, Joseph Olet, invented the pari-mutuel betting system. And the founder of our racetrack, Lewis Clark, actually brought home a couple French pari-mutuel machines from Europe and used them on and off at Churchill Downs for some years in the 1870s and 1880s. But those pari-mutuel machines that he brought home ended up being the foundation of what saved Kentucky racing, saved the Kentucky Derby, and ultimately saved American racing, because they found a little loophole in Kentucky's legislation that was outlawing bookmakers, outlawing pool sellers, but it was not outlawing pari-mutuel betting. And so pari-mutuel betting became a way that Kentucky racetracks could stay open when racetracks, huge racetracks all over the country in New Orleans and in Virginia and New York were closing because of these anti-gambling legislations.
Well, and the rising fortunes of Churchill Downs mirrored the success of some prominent black jockeys. You write about Isaac Burns Murphy and later Willie Sims. When and why did that start to change?
One of the themes that runs through our book is that what happens in the Kentucky Derby and the way that we can trace social history through the lens of the Kentucky Derby, it's what was happening in the United States at the time. And of course, the rise of Jim Crow, the rise of segregation, the rise of racial violence in the 1890s and early 1900s was absolutely the cause for black horsemen who had fundamentally built and sustained the sport of horse racing in the United States. Black horsemen were run out of this sport, sometimes quite literally, physically run out of the sport. Isaac Burns Murphy is a great example. Willie Sims is a great example of these incredible Gilded Age black jockeys who were achieving the highest levels. I mean, Isaac Burns Murphy was one of the highest paid jockeys in the sport of horse racing during his era in the 1880s, 1890s. Only a decade later, a jockey like Jimmy Wingfield, for example. Jimmy Wingfield, he's the last black jockey to win the Kentucky Derby. He won back-to-back Kentucky Derbies in 1901 and 1902. And 1902, that's the last year that a black jockey won the Kentucky Derby. And only a handful of black jockeys have ridden in the Kentucky Derby after that point. And the reason is Jim Crow, the rise of Jim Crow and the rise of segregation really was the reason why black horsemen were having to search for other ways to live when horse racing had been their bread and butter. Jimmy Wingfield left for Europe, in fact, in 1903, just the year after he rode in his last Kentucky Derby. And he ended up becoming a very successful jockey in Russia, in Poland, in France, was very well celebrated, but he never returned to ride to the United States because really it was just too dangerous, sometimes physically, but also certainly emotionally and spiritually, to be a black man trying to make it in a sport that fundamentally didn't want them anymore.
We'll continue our conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll discuss a film that explores the rich history of King Records. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our recorded conversation about the history of the Kentucky Derby, the longest continuously held sporting event in the United States. My guest is Jessica Whitehead, curator of collections at the Kentucky Derby Museum and author of The History of the Kentucky Derby in 75 Objects. You note in the book that 1903 was the first year the Derby was held on a Saturday in May. Was it already a spectacle by that point?
really, Churchill Downs was having some trouble in the early 1900s. So they had been having some reputation issues. Part of that was to do with some interesting decisions by the founder of the racetrack, Meriwether Lewis Clark Jr., went by Lewis Clark. Lewis Clark was sort of a mercurial, unusual guy, very charming when he wanted to be, but he in particular was also part of the group who were not enamored with bookmakers, and that caused a lot of friction with some major horse owners who wanted to have bookmakers at the Louisville Jockey Club. What the Churchill Downs was initially called, wanted to have bookmakers there to bet on their own horses. That caused some reputation issues. They were having financial issues. The track eventually went bankrupt and changed ownership in the 1890s. Things were still sort of tenuous for this new ownership, even though in the 1890s they built a new grandstand. Of course, that grandstand is that beautiful Twin Spires grandstand that is still the centerpiece of Churchill Downs today. And certainly those Twin Spires are iconic for American racing and for Kentucky racing specifically. But even though they had this new grandstand, they had new ownership, early 1900s, Churchill Downs was having some trouble still attracting people to the track, not only fans, but also great horses. But there were a couple really important decisions made by a man named Matt Wynn, who ultimately would rise to be president and CEO of the racetrack and is considered one of the most important movers and shakers in the history of the Kentucky Derby because of his marketing prowess. He started courting the media to come to his racetrack and to write about and in broad syndication what they were seeing at the racetrack. And it just so happened that there were a couple really awesome horses with really incredible backstories that came along in the 1910s specifically that helped catapult the race into the American imagination. One of those horses was a horse named Donerail. Donerail is still the longest shot to win the Kentucky Derby. He won at 91-1 odds, which is incredible. And so if you had made a modest bet on Donerail, you were walking home with about $180 to a $2 bet, which is pretty incredible. So the story of Donerail, and then in 1915, the story of the first filly to win the Kentucky Derby, the first female horse. Her name was Regret. She was also owned by a prominent Eastern horseman from the Whitney family, and that name recognition did a lot to help propel the Kentucky Derby into broader American consciousness. You start to see these stories being fundamental to weaving a new narrative about Churchill Downs and about the Kentucky Derby that ultimately, became this cultural extravaganza that we recognize now through, just this really savvy building of that story around this important race, not just making it a sporting event.
And 1945, of course, saw the first Derby Day that wasn't because of a U.S. government ban. But you write that industrious minds came up with a slow but sure alternative.
Oh, gosh, that's one of my favorite stories. That story we uncovered, of course, while we were dealing with another Derby that almost wasn't in 2020. I was writing this book while the COVID-19 pandemic was happening and while we were having another remarkable series of historic moments at Churchill Downs, including the first Saturday in September Derby in 2020. We uncovered this great story of what some, again, very industrious marketing minds put together, something called the Turtle Derby. The Turtle Derby, which was held on Derby Day in 1945, Derby Day had been postponed indefinitely. It ended up being run in June. But in order to lift the spirits of a, war-beleaguered public, they ended up having a bunch of turtles, quote, run against one another. They run necessarily in any real sense. But ended up having some Derby trainers actually listed as the trainers for these turtles. And it was very, very cute, very sweet, very uplifting. And that was a tradition that actually got revived a couple times because I think people thought it was such a fun idea. And in fact, there was a turtle derby that ran in 2020 as well, which was very cute. So
yeah. We're talking in this recorded conversation about the history of the Kentucky Derby as examined through the Kentucky Derby Museum's collection. Decades later, Louisville and Churchill Downs became a place of protest in the fight for civil rights in the 1960s, and then again in 2020 after the killing of Breonna Taylor by Louisville police. Talk a little bit about that history and how the canvas called Isaac and Brown Dick kind of speaks to it.
That's another incredible piece that we have on display on the first floor of our galleries at the museum. It's a painting by a man named Wadsworth Jarrell. And Wadsworth Jarrell was an artist very closely tied to social justice movements in the 1960s, 1970s. He was part of a group called Afro-Cobra. Afro-Cobra was part of sort of the African futurist artistic movement and literary movement that sort of melded social justice and art together. And Jarrell, in the 1990s, put horse racing and social justice together in a series that he did called Edge Cutters that actually premiered here at the Kentucky Derby Museum in 1992. This painting, Isaac and Brown Dick, which is in our galleries, is part of that series. And it's this incredibly beautiful canvas with wonderful allusions to the African diaspora, certainly to African motifs and artistic techniques and colors. And this piece is a great way to be able to talk about the way that social justice and horse racing have connected over the years. The 1960s, you mentioned, certainly Martin Luther King was in Louisville and was potentially going to be attending the Kentucky Derby and doing a protest at Churchill Downs that ultimately didn't end up happening for safety reasons because there were very real concerns that there was going to be a Ku Klux Klan rally to sort of combat this influence of peaceful protest. Very interesting history, very troubling history, of course, that again mirrors what was happening in the larger United States. Churchill Downs is a stage on which all kinds of things have played out, and the civil rights movement is no different.
Your book has lots of great information about the people who are involved in this race and in the horse industry, Latin jockeys, women jockeys. But I want to talk next about the horses themselves. And there are these stories that are sometimes glorious, sometimes tragic. I'm thinking of Barbaro. My younger daughter was 5 when Barbaro raced, and she was calling him Pinky, Pinky, Pinky because of the pink on his silks and was so excited when he won. But that story ended so tragically. And then, of course, we have the deaths of the 12 horses during the 2023 spring meet. Can you talk a little bit about that? I don't know if those 2023 deaths have ever been explained.
You mentioned Barbaro. Barbaro, there's a really great quote where Barbaro's trainer talks about the idea that we emotionally connect with these horses because they're like these national pets to us. You know, they're these incredible, incredible inspirations. They're also, you know, wonderful animals that on which we, I'm sure, in many ways project our own feelings, our own needs. To see stories like Barbaro's unfold are, you know, heart-wrenching, of course. What I think is really exciting is that Kentucky and Churchill Downs have really committed to the Horse Racing Integrity Authority, something that is in place now to really be a resource for horsemen, for horsewomen, for the industry as a whole, to try and make sure that this sport is being run as safely and as carefully and as positively as possible. But there have been wonderful reports coming out of the Horse Racing Integrity Authority this year about the safety of racetracks and about the decrease of horse fatalities. So I hope that that only continues. And I think that there is a commitment here at Churchill Downs and in Kentucky to making sure that trajectory continues.
Well, I've been talking with Jessica Whitehead, curator of collections at the Kentucky Derby Museum and author of The History of the Kentucky Derby in 75 Objects. Thank you so much for your time today, Jessica. It's been great talking with you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Up next, we'll hear about a documentary that explores the rich history of King Records in Evanston. This is Cincinnati Edition.